You are listening to Punk's Podcast, episode 563. And here we are again. And let's go.
Try it, won't pick it up. Take them lights away. Try it, won't pick it up. Don't take your life away. Try it, won't pick it up. Don't try to take my night away. And please don't you ask me if I love you. If you don't know what I'm doing, what you know is try it, won't pick it up.
And welcome back to the Pongies Podcast. Listen, people, we got a lot to talk about tonight, so we're not going to do the mail because we've got a lot to talk about, and I'm going to pontificate about something, but we are going to be talking about Lake Tigre. We're going to be talking about The Chisel. We're going to be talking about Pass Away and Meet Me at the Altar. We're also going to be talking about We Are the Union, Marissa Paternoster of Screaming Females, Jim Rulin's new book, Surfboard's new album, and also Coachella 2022, the divisive new statement by them, which is, people don't even agree if their statement is divisive or not. So that's how divisive it is. But in the meantime, first of all, we're here with Sam Barrett. Sam Barrett, what's happening?
Hi, I'm here. And apparently there's a lot going on.
Hallie Bullitt, is there a lot going on in your life? Is there a lot going on in general?
It is I, Hallie Bullitt. There's a lot going on in my life. I mean, come on. Yeah, there's too much going on in general. We all know. We're all like totally overwhelmed, you know?
And more, is there too much going on, the right amount going on, or not enough going on?
It's one of those things where when a lot's going on, it feels like a lot's going on and it's overwhelming, but it also feels like not enough is going on, you know? So, like, I think a good amount is going on, but I always want more going on. But that's a, I know that's a bad thing because I know then everything will fall apart.
I feel like, not to bring this up, I feel like Anne Moore is taking answer responses, lessons from like Donald Trump. There's a lot going on, but there's nothing going on. But it's good things are going on, but it's bad things are going on. I make a lot of money. Yeah.
This also feels like a ska song.
Oh my gosh. I need the trumpet.
Isn't like one big ska song. Well, anyway, people, listen, I just got to do a quick rundown. And if Sam, Hallie, or Em have any show memories to listen, people, on what's today? Today's Thursday. On Tuesday, I saw Flock of Seagulls. They're on tour right now. They sound fantastic. And honestly, if Flock of Seagulls didn't have that one giant radio hit or the two giant radio hits, they without question would be cited as one of the greatest post-punk bands, a la New Order or those kinds of bands. Flock of Seagulls was so good. Before that, on Friday, I saw KRS. No, on Saturday, I saw Zorn, Philadelphia's death rock vampire band, and they absolutely destroyed it at the new club. It's not a new club, but it's the club in Philadelphia that the punks go to now because the old place, Cousin Danny's, has been essentially shut down for the time being. So now all the punks are going to the Photo Club, which, I mean, it's pretty it's a private club, so you have to, like, say that you're there for the show to get in, so it's kind of weird, but it's pretty punk. It's outside, which is kind of cool, and Zorn, the singer Eric, was like climbing up on the roof and jumping from it, and it was a pretty wild punk. People were smoking in the mosh pit, which is always a very punk thing, you know, lit flames. And then before that, I saw KRS-One on Friday, who absolutely destroyed it. He did he's like this show's been delayed for 2 years. He did basically a greatest hit show. It was amazing. And then before that, I saw Yellow Man on, I think it was a Tuesday, and Yellow Man killed it, and he is on fire. Go see Yellow Man. And tomorrow, I am seeing Chris Gethard do not one, but two shows, a Beautiful Anonymous taping and also a stand-up show. So if Chris Gethard's coming to your town, go see him because he's very funny. I've never actually seen a stand-up live, but I'm excited to see it.
Oh, that's awesome. That's so fun. I'll tell him you'll be there.
Well, I will bring roses and throw them on the stage. And then also, completely unrelated, and this is much to do – it's not related to anything – so I bought the Colleen Green album on Bandcamp a little while ago, and I've been listening to the MP3s, and it sounds really good. I got the CD in the mail, And oh my God, the new Colleen Green album, it's amazing. You might have to listen to it. Like I've had it now probably 5 days on CDs. I probably listened to it like 15 times. I just keep playing it over. The actual sound is amazing. The songwriting, it's a little different than the last album. And it's almost like goth almost, or goth tinged. And anyway, the new Colleen Green album is absolutely fantastic. If you like Colleen Green, if you like goth, if you like pop punk that's kind of scary or weird or krautrockish, it is absolutely fantastic. Two thumbs up to the new Colleen Green CD for sure. I'm going to play one of her songs on this episode.
It's going into my Bandcamp cart right now.
It's cool. I mean, honestly, like it's kind of an album type album that you have to like listen to the whole. It's only like 25 minutes, but it's like it's really good. Like I was really amazed at how good it. I'm like, wow. It's like this is exactly what I want. So, anyways, new Colleen Green album. Highly recommend it. Has anybody seen any shows, or should we play a song and then jump into the news?
I just went to your show on Friday. Yeah, I think it was Friday. Everything is blurring together these days. I went to go see Cross Keys. They're a Philadelphia band. Really, really cool. Yeah, the singer loves to wear the prettiest shirts ever. I love Josh's shirts. Be Well, that's the Brian Mantarian's like project thing, which is like my jam. I think like 2 years ago, I think they put out their album and it's freaking fantastic. And H2O, which was a show that was supposed to happen for, I think, Toby's like 50th birthday or something like 2 years ago, and it got pushed back. So yeah. So that was fun. And, you know, it was at Crossroads in New Jersey, and yeah, I miss live shows. I really do. People wear masks, please. Please, please.
there we have it. And there's a lot of shows coming up on the calendar, people. So keep – oh, as a side note, not to get too off in COVID land, but the news isn't really showing, like, COVID, like, rates anymore, I guess. So I assume that means it's getting better, I guess. Which only goes to show that, yes, wearing a mask, social distancing, and vaccination is how to beat this thing. And I remember all these guys that were like, open it up, blah, blah, blah. That's how, you know, herd immunity, blah, blah, blah. Where are those guys now? You admit that you're wrong. You were wrong. You were wrong. You know, so admit it. You know what I'm saying? Everybody's got a big mouth, and science was proven correct. You know, I don't need a public acknowledgement of wrong or guilt. I don't need that, and we don't need that. Just next time something happens, be rational, use science, and just be cool. Don't be a dick. Don't be wacky, and think for yourself. You know, I always like how people thinking for themselves usually means they do exactly what some guy tells them to do. Anyways, let's play some Colleen Green. This is Colleen Green doing one of my favorite songs from the new album. It's called You Don't Exist. And the new album is called Cool, and we'll be right back. And that was Cool by Colleen Green. No, I'm sorry. That was You Don't Exist by Colleen Green off the album Cool, which is a very cool album. Here's something that's not cool, I guess. Le Tigre, of course, was the band fronted by Kathleen Hanna and also Joanna Fateman, as well as a revolving drummer or two. And they recently filed a civil suit in the Southern District of New York. They requested a declaratory judgment against Barry Mann. The reason they filed a lawsuit is because Barry Mann has been sending them cease and desists and presumably settlement demands, saying that his song, Who Put the Bomb in the Bomb Shabomp, rips off Decepticon, which is from like 2007 or so, or around there. Who Put the Bomb is obviously from like the early 60s. Kathleen Hanna and Joanna sued him first, I guess, so to really get the matter settled once and all. And suing first does give you a slight advantage, a very slight advantage, hypothetically. And so anyways, they file a suit and they say, court, we want a ruling that we are not liable to Mr. Mann. And they're saying they have two main grounds as to why they're not liable to Mann. They're saying Mann doesn't have the ability to sue anybody at all for this song because his own song rips off two other songs. They're saying his song rips off Blue Moon by the Marcells, and it also rips off Ram-a-Lam-a Ding Dong by the Edsels. So he can't even sue anybody for a song because his song is a ripoff. And they further argue if his song isn't a ripoff, then he still can't. We're still not liable because we have fair use. We have fair use as regard to the cited material because it's transformative, and other reasons as well. For the same exact reason why he hypothetically is not liable to the Marcells and the Edsels. Weirdly, in social media, a lot of people are like, I don't care about this. And I'm like, are you saying you don't care about Le Tigre because you don't think Le Tigre is punk? Because Bikini Kill is definitely punk. Or do you not care about it because it's a lawsuit? And you should care about it because it's copyright law. Ever since Robin Thicke's what was Robin Thicke's song we got sued by Marvin Gaye with the Naked Women?
Blurred Lines.
Ever since that copyright law, like everyone's been a little iffy because that Robin Thicke was found to be liable to Marvin Gaye, and pretty much everyone thinks that was a bad ruling by the judge, a very bad ruling by the judge, because they didn't even cite any material that was stolen. They said it like a general vibe, but a vibe is not protectable for copyright. You can only protect material that is fixed in a permanent format, that is notes, chords, lyrics, so forth. A vibe you can't protect. So everyone's kind of a little nervous about copyright these days. It's been cooling off lately, and there have been some judgments following Blurred Lines that are not as big as Blurred Lines, but that have suggested the judge in that case did go too far. That being said, everyone's still a little nervous and a little trigger happy. Another great example would be the Led Zeppelin Spirit lawsuit that Led Zeppelin did finally win recently. And so you should care about this because this affects all music, particularly punk music, which often does borrow from other things, either to make fun of it or to use it, or and also there's only, you know, most songs have three chords and there's not that many chords to begin with, so you're going to run into this problem a lot. I've got an opinion. I don't know if you guys want to, me to give my opinion or if you guys want to go first.
I want to hear what M. Moore thinks always.
Yeah, M. Moore, go ahead. What's the judge do in this case?
I think rule in favor of Le Tigre. And what's the guy's name? Barry Mann. Yeah. He should have to pay something to the Edsels and the Marcells because, like, he did. It does sound like kind of blatant ripoffs. And I know that in, like, his song, the Who Took the Bomb, the two lines, like the Who Took the Bomb from the thing and the other one, they're similar to like the Decepticon where it's, or, oh, I messed that up. Wait, no, I didn't. Cause,
you're good. I'm following you.
Because his is Who Put the, and then Le Tigre's is Who Took the. Yeah, because it was like they changed a word, which gives them more, like, they didn't take the lines. And it's a sentiment I'm sure, like, lots of people have had at the time and before. So I don't think Barry Mann really has a leg to stand on. What would you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, it is funny that he is accusing them of the exact same thing he did himself, which is just, you're taking a phrasing that's like an iconic thing that everyone recognizes from like a rock and roll song and a time and a sound. And like that, I mean, it's literally exactly what he did when he was writing his song. So it's ironic, if nothing else. But like also, it just also seems like mean and like, why now? It just sort of seems like, you know, does he just like have bills to pay now? Why is he going after them now? It just seems like, yeah, sort of pathetic and mean. So I'm not into this at all. I hope he loses. John, yeah. You're the lawyer. What do you think?
I think he does have grounds to sue. I think, rather, he does have standing to sue. But I think Le Tigre is correct, and then I think it's a fair use. It's fair use of the material. Obviously, he took the phrase "Ramalama Ding Dong" from the song "Ramalama Ding Dong." But you're allowed to act, song titles actually are not copyrightable, and that's all he took from that song. From the Marcells, I guess you could argue he kind of took the woo-hoo, but a million songs have that. So I think his use of those songs is clearly fair use. Likewise, I think Le Tigre repurposing that phrase and then kind of commenting on that phrase certainly is fair use. And in fact, one of the explicit reasons for fair use is commentary and criticism. So it certainly is commentary and or criticism of the line. And further, it's extremely transformative. Their use of that line and their song doesn't sound like his line at all. It's really just talking about the exact thing that he did do. Can you guys hear me?
I think he turned into a ghost.
I can hear you. You were just cutting in and out for a second there.
Okay. So I've got to record on my end. They're commenting on what he did, obviously. So I think it certainly is fair use by Le Tigre. I think Le Tigre is firmly in the right here, except for they said one thing that annoyed me, and of course I can never let anyone off the hook completely, but they did one thing that really did annoy me, and here's they said that here we go. Give me a second here. Here we go. As part of the complaint, Hannah and Fateman alleged this is them talking now in the complaint, alleging in the complaint. Mr. Mann did not create these vocables or song titles. Rather, it appears that Mr. Mann and his co-writer copied them from black doo-wop groups active during the late 50s and early 60s. I feel as though that's Le Tigre's attorney being a little too cute and also trying to get some extra leverage and confuse the actual legal question here. It's irrelevant that they're black. Certainly, black artists have been ripped off for years. But that being said, blues and doo-wop and rock and roll and folk are built on reusing and repurposing old material. So it's unfair to say that the Marcells or that the Edsels got ripped off and that's all there is to it. Blue Moon is a reworking of a song that goes back to 1870, 1880. You know, it certainly goes back to 1900. It's actually taken from a folk song from like 1910, 1920 in the southeastern United States. So people say, oh, Led Zeppelin ripped off Robert Johnson. Well, they did, but Robert Johnson also, quote, ripped off other people. But he didn't really rip them off. That's the genre. The genre is you're allowed to rework things, just like dance hall. A Jamaican dance hall, which is that's what it's built off of. That's exactly what folk and blues are built off. You can rework, repurpose other stuff for your own thing. Now, whether or not it's copyrightable is a different question. But to say that there's some sort of race dynamic here, I think is very unfair and just is in poor taste. And I think it's weaponizing that in an area where it's not relevant, and therefore it's actually weakening times when that actually is a relevant issue. And it's a picayune complaint. It just annoyed me that they put that in there because it's really not relevant and not accurate, if you ask me.
Yeah, I don't know. It didn't bother me, but you're right. It might not be totally relevant to the lawsuit. But I did want to ask you a question, which is you said you thought that his was fair use because he'd only used the titles of the songs. But isn't that also what Le Tigre did? His song is called... Who Put the Bomb, right? Isn't that what his song is called?
I'm saying Le Tigre has the exact same fair use argument he has.
Okay. All right, got it.
No, I'm saying Le Tigre, the reason that he has standing is the exact reason why Le Tigre is not liable at all. Fair use.
Yeah, totally.
Sam Barrett, what's your take?
Yeah, so I... I have, like, a lot of issues with this, because here's the thing. I was like, yeah, you brought up the three chords thing. I was like, punk music is three chords, right? And I was like, and a lot of bands, they take influences from each other. And if you start suing everyone for stealing, like, influences from each other, or, you know, just pieces of things from each other, then essentially, isn't that going to kill music? Isn't that going to kill, like, the fact that people want to make music because they're like, oh, well, you know, I really like this riff. I'm going to make a riff that sounds like that riff, you know, but slightly different. yeah, I do think that if it was me, I would agree with Lee Tigre, because, you know, it's he exactly did what everyone else does, and they take things from other places that's, you know, from years and years and years ago. So I do think that they do have a leg to stand on with that. The song is really cool, so I'm about that.
Actually, Sam does bring up one thing. All four of these songs are unbelievably killer songs. All four of them. I listen to all four of them. I'm like, each one of these songs is absolutely perfect. So why can't we all just get along? Speaking of getting along, and more, The Chisel. Tell us about The Chisel.
All right. So The Chisel, they are from the UK, and they're made up of members of Chubby and the Gang, Stingray, and Big Cheese. So they've put out three EPs since 2020, so one in 2020 and two from earlier this year. And they just announced that they're going to be releasing their first LP, and it was recorded by Jonah Falco of Fucked Up, and he was a part of the recording process for the previous EPs as well. So that's kind of cool. So the LP is called Retaliation. And they released a video for their first single of the same name. So the video is just like they're playing kind of in a practice looking space. There's like exposed rafters, and there's a plant on one of the amps, and, you know, it looks like a nice room. And like the band have a lot of energy, and the lead singer is just going at it. Like, he's leaning on the mic stand, he's moving around. Looks like a good place to be. and then, like, the song itself is also, like, it's really good. There's elements of, like, oi, there's elements of hardcore. It's very urgent. And, like, there's some gang vocals. Like, you can hear a little bit of, like, Chubby and the Gang influence, sort of, on the, like, the instruments. I really liked the song, and I liked the band, and I was listening to it, and I was trying to come up, like, how to describe it properly, and I don't think I did a good job, but, like, it's a really interesting song, in that the first time you listen to it, it's like, oh, it sounds very straightforward, but the more you listen to it, the more you notice, like, in different areas. So I'm excited to hear what they'll do with a full-length album, because I've really liked their EPs so far. What did you guys think of The Chisel?
Oh, I love this. Like, now since you said that, like, Chubby and the Gang, like, is, yeah, like, you know, they're a part of this, I was like, oh, that makes so much sense why I like it, because my husband's been buying all that stuff, and I've just been listening to it, and I'm like, oh, that's cool. Yeah, no, like, I just sent this to him, like, 2 seconds ago, and was like, you might want to listen to this, and now it's all clicking. Yeah, no, I also had an issue, like, I listened to it a couple times, and I was like, I can't exactly pinpoint what this sounds like to me. Like, you know, it's just like, it's, I love the energy of it. I like, it's like, you know, just the way that the vocals work with all of the guitar work and stuff like that. Yeah, I'm about this, and thank you for finding it, Em.
It's for sure. So good, right? And I had like a similar moment, Sam, where like M just said that Jonah from Fucked Up was involved, and I was like, yeah. Oh, I was because I it had reminded me of Fucked Up, not in that it really, not, just in that like yelly vocals over super lush, like melodic hooky guitars is mm-hmm. like a great combination in my book. Like that's just awesome. And like, it did remind me of Fucked Up in that way, in that you have this contrast of like, these vocals that are really not at all trying to sound pretty with guitars that really are like quite pretty actually, you know, also powerful, but yeah, it's like, it is, it's kind of like Oi meets Fucked Up, right? It's just great. Like I really, really, really loved this. John, were you into this?
Yeah, I liked how it had sort of like a hardcore speed, like hardcore punk speed and intensity, but it sounds very happy, but then the vocals are kind of oi-ish. So it's a interesting combination that I don't think I've heard. Usually hardcore is mean and negative and rough. You know, this is kind of happy and bright. And I thought that was an interesting contrast and a cool track. So, yeah, I think it's cool. I think people are excited to see what this band does next. Along those lines, Sam, tell us about Pass Away and the new song Halloween.
Yeah, so there's a band from Brooklyn. They're called Pass Away. They actually feature members of I Am the Avalanche and Crime in Stereo. So it's the singer guitarist Mike Ireland. He's the guy in I Am the Avalanche, and Eric from he's now playing in Crime in Stereo. So they're releasing their sophomore album 39 sometime in November, I think around Thanksgiving-ish. And they just released their first taste of music from this album, and it is called Halloween, which I think is very fitting for this month. They premiered it over Brooklyn Vegan, and it was actually really cute because the song, I guess, like, has something to do with Mike and his, like, wife having this like game where, you know, they live in Brooklyn and this is a very Brooklyn story, I guess. They have this game where they look at people and they're like, oh, real life or Halloween? Because, you know, we dress a little weird here sometimes. Especially if you ride the L train. Hallie probably knows.
Well, no, I feel like I'm one of the people you're accusing, because I remember that there was a time in my life where I actually didn't really like the Halloween season because people would see me walking around. They'd be like, great costume. And I'd be like, wait, this is just how I dress.
This is how I look.
This is just, I wear this kitty hoodie all the time. This isn't my costume.
Well, I think it's rad. I also think your kitty hoodie is rad, so. Yeah, so what do you guys think about this?
I wasn't able to listen to it. Am I being like a space cadet about this? It felt like it was my only option was listening to it on Amazon Music, which I don't do.
Because I hate no. Amazon. It's streaming off of Brooklyn Vegan, the website. So,
no, but even on Brooklyn Vegan, I felt like it wanted me to go to Amazon Music. Okay, I'm an old lady. Go ahead. Go, you all talk about it. I listened to their other stuff, which I liked a lot. So when I can figure out how to listen to this, I'm sure I will like it.
And what do you think of it?
I thought it was really good. It's funny because, like, in my notes, I have... slightly melancholy, but new beginning / moving forward. And beside that, it's perfect fall song. So like, it gave me a lot of like fall vibes that way. And I think probably because it was like it's called Halloween and that's kind of what I was thinking about. But, no, the song's really good. It's, like it's melodic and there's lots going on. I like the lyrics and like there's the like the vocal melodies and runs and stuff, and that gets stuck in my head so much. So it has been stuck in my head for a good portion of today for sure, and I will look them up more and check them out, check out more of their stuff. John, what did you think?
not my style. Not my style. I thought it was fine. Not my style. Here's something that I guess gave me more pause, and I thought about a little bit more. Meet Me at the Altar, which is kind of a new buzz band on Fueled by Ramen. They released a video for a track called Now or Never, and that's off their EP Model Citizen, and this band's kind of making a lot of noise, and it's also upsetting a lot of traditional punkers or whatever, or not even traditional, you know, loser punkers, I guess. So I actually had something. Well, I'll just say, and then maybe you guys can respond. Is A, I'm glad there's a band like this out there. It's not for me, but it's not for me. It's for, you know, younger people and people that are different than me. And I'm glad this kind of a band is in punk or the punkish realm to a degree, and is kind of doing something unique and different. And they've got a unique style. I will say two comments, really. A, I will say that this does appear to have, you know, Fueled by Ramen is a ghost for major labels. Everyone knows that. But specter for major labels. This definitely does seem to have the glint of major labels behind the scenes working on it. And not, like I said, not that major labels are necessarily a bad thing. Major labels can be very good. It's just the fact that it's hidden. And the fact that these bands come out of nowhere and they're everywhere, makes me feel a little uneasy. That being said, maybe it's a necessary, quote, evil to make a band like this and similar bands like this break through the millions and millions and millions of middle-of-the-road pop-punk bands and millions and millions and middle-of-the-road sad guy indie bands. Maybe it's necessarily able to break through that ice. Maybe, I don't know. What caused me some pause mostly on this is the idea of this video. They're like, if we play this diner, it might cause some problems, but we got to do it because it'll be a memory. Is this ringing a bell for any of you three as a different event about a year ago or 2 years ago? Right, I'm like, this is exactly what Wacko did, like, 2 years ago. I guess about 2 years ago now, Wacko famously played a Denny's, and a table was broken. We're like, oh my god, they broke a table at Denny's. Like, was that like $32? You know. But anyway, so Wacko played at Denny's, and actually, quite sadly, the manager had like a real problem with it appears the manager okayed it, but he wasn't supposed to, and it caused him a lot of problems. However, if you watch a video from that show, it really is crazy. And it's like people jumping off the table at Denny's. Like, it's a hardcore punk show at Denny's, and the kids are just going crazy, and they're all pretty young, and they all look real cool, and it looks just like a wild time. And Wacko's a wacky band to begin with, and it was like a total thing. Like, it was a thing. And to me, this just seems to be that Fueled by Ramen, and maybe a major label, said, oh, let's just steal that idea and use it for our video. Like I'm while you guys talk, I'm gonna see if Wacko commented on this, but if I was Wacko, I'd be kind of mad. It's like you straight up stole our idea and didn't give us credit. And I, as the author of the Punk News Summer Soiree 2 tabletop action board game starring Joe Jack Talcum and World Inferno Friendship Society, I know how that can feel when someone else comes along and takes your idea and you can't stop them because legally they're allowed to take your idea, but still it's the exact same idea, and you know it was the same idea because that person's name was on the ticket buyer list of that show. So I feel you, Wacko. I'm going to look it up and you guys can respond, and maybe I'm just a little too sensitive because I have echoes of my own life in it.
This was like so fun, you guys. Like, I like John. Maybe when the song first started playing, it was maybe having a little bit too much like Sum 41 vibes for me, like just that like super slick like radio pop punk from like the early 2000s. And then I don't know, this band just like blew through that skepticism in about 15 seconds because they are just having so much fun. Like, they legit can fucking sing and play, dude. Like, and I don't know. I just was totally on board. It does make me laugh that John pointed out that the table got broken at the Wacko show, because the one thing I noticed in the video is that it really took me a second to even realize what was going on, because they removed all the tables from the diner that they're playing in, so that for a while it took me a second to even understand that it was a diner. I was like, what? Where are they playing? It just looks like a room. But I did get it. I did get it eventually. But I guess they didn't want to, like, you know, go down the broken table route again. I don't know. Sam, did you like this?
So yeah, I actually when they started, it started really slow. I literally was going, what is the drummer playing on that Switch? I was like, is she on Animal Crossing? Can I play with her? So that was number one. Then two, like it did take a little bit for me to, I guess, get what was happening. I didn't get that entire wacko thing until John just said it right now, because I think I just like buried that like deep somewhere else. But I do like the fact that, like, if you make it to the end is so cute. Like, I was really, like, it literally warms my heart because, you know, they're doing all of this now or never, right? And it almost seems like they were doing it to make little kids, like, or, like, you know, other people, like, you know, it's okay to be a punk. It's okay to like this. And, you know, it's okay to not play it on guitar well a little bit. So I did appreciate that. It does make sense that they're touring with State Champs because, you know, it's all alike there. I don't think that I would pick this up and listen to it every day, although I have been listening to a lot of Newfound Glory. So who knows? Maybe this might be my best band ever this year.
And, like, what do you guys think about John's, like, major label point? Because, like, I don't know. It's like, I don't know. Avril Lavigne kind of came out of nowhere on a major label and, like, sold, like, I think she sold, like, 40 million records worldwide. And, like, I don't know. Like, why shouldn't that happen for this band? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I guess I understand what you're saying, though, John. Like, that you don't like it not being, like, up front. You don't want it to be... like there's a puppet with a puppet master in the back.
Right.
But I don't know. I would love to see this band get huge. I think they've got like everything. I think they've just got everything appealing going on for them, you know?
I do like how just them existing upsets people. And that's a great start. That is a great start.
Who is getting upset about this?
You know who.
Yeah, just like general internet trash.
That's perfect.
Can we coin that somehow?
Yes.
I have to believe that you liked this as much as I did.
Yeah, I thought it was great. Like again, it's not. But, like, the type of music's not what I listen to very often. Like, in small doses, it's very good. The band, like, they're very talented. They know what they're doing. And just their energy, like, they're happy to be there. They want to be there. They are there. You know, like, they're making their presence known. And I think that's awesome. And same here. Like, I hope they blow up. I hope they get really big. And, like, people... know them and see them. And like again with the video, like Sam, like you were saying, how like when you watch to the end, there's the girl who sees them like at the diner, and you know, like I think it shows up at one point, like life changed or something. Yep. And then she goes yeah and like does the cover at the end, and it's just that's so good. So I hope like you know, well, like obviously they recognize their impact, and I hope a lot of people, like, if it is their first, like, kind of punky band or anything, like, they do absorb that, and they do go, and, you know, like, this space is for me, I can do this, I want to do this, and I want to be here, so hopefully, you know, we see lots more of that.
I mean, my life would have been very different if there had been bands like this when I was growing up, you know? Like, yeah. I didn't, like, go out on a limb and learn to play the bass until I was in my 20s, you know, because I didn't have much of that modeled for me. I had, like, the Go-Go's to look at and, like, I don't know, like, Prince's drummer and, like, you know, and, like, the bassist from Smashing Pumpkins. And, like, you know, I don't know. It just didn't, you know, it was, I think this is, like, I think it's just incredible how many we've talked about it before, but I guess what I haven't talked about before is just how the ripple effects of this era of women in music we're going to be feeling this for decades to come, because there are just so many impressionable little girls out there who are like seeing this, and it just nothing about women rocking seems unusual to them. You know, it's just how it is now. And it's like, I find it so exciting.
Well, speaking of something exciting, someone play a song. Who's got a tune to play?
Sam, play a
tune.
Oh.
Yeah, okay.
And
okay.
Go. Sam, go. So, Sam, go. Sam, go. And then M, and then Howie. We'll do it.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, there is a band from Copenhagen. Oh, geez. Can I talk today? Geez. Anyways, they're called Forever and Clean. They are really good. They are really fun. So they just put out a single that's off of another album that they're putting out soon. So I'm gonna play Woods.
And we are back. And let's talk about ska. We are there's been this whole thing where people are trying to get Riot Fest to get Operation Ivy to reunite to play Riot Fest. And then the whole thing has sort of culminated in We Are the Union and Eve 6, who have been kind of hanging around each other. They released a cover of Sound System by Operation Ivy. It premiered at Riot Fest. Yeah, so listen, everyone loves ska now, and everyone's happy, and once Operation Ivy reunited, everyone's shaking hands and patting each other on the back and laughing together and having a good old time. Hallie Bullet, is that the correct stance? Should we all be as pleased with ourselves as we all are?
You know, you guys, as I think a lot of you do, like I do just sort of, you know, as I'm listening to this stuff, I just do just jot down just like a word or a sentence or just so I remember what the hell I listened to, because we'll listen to a lot of stuff in an episode. But I literally all I wrote to myself about this song was, I didn't think you could make this song boring. This is such a good Op Ivy song. How do you make it so safe and so, like, who cares? Who cares at all about this? That being said, if somehow all of these efforts make it so that Op Ivy reunites, that would be amazing.
I am strongly against an Operation Ivy reunion. I don't want to see it. It would be a bummer. It won't live up to what people want to see. If people want to see some Operation Ivy type action, Classics of Love with Jesse Michaels, still an amazing band. Go see that. Don't live in the past. Don't, just because you had a good, you know, middle school or high school experience with ska in the 90s doesn't mean we all have to live through it. You know, get your own life, people.
but don't you but don't you think probably skeptics thought that about, like, it, lots of reunions, like the Jawbreaker reunion, like probably people were like, it's not going to be what you want it to be. And then it kind of was exactly what people wanted it to be, you know?
I will acknowledge that some reunions are as good as you would hope them would be. The Misfits, Samhain, Amoebix, before things went wonky. No, but from my perspective, well, first of all, Jesse Michaels is the man. Jesse Michaels at the top of his game. If you don't believe me, listen to the Classic of Love EP that came out like last year. The other people, I'm not going to comment on, and I'm just not sure it would be the same. You know what I mean? And so I think it would be a bummer, frankly. And like I said, if they all want to make a whole bunch of money and do it, well, then I'm all for it. What I will say is maybe I'm being a sourpuss here, but like with this whole ska thing, it's like everyone's like all patting each other on the back, like ska. And I maybe I'm being contrarian, maybe I'm being a negative Nancy, but everyone seems very pleased with themselves. Everyone seems to celebrate things that are so minor and really not worth celebrating when there is other great art out there that is worth celebrating. I guess what I'm saying is, on the Punk News Instagram, we could put a huge in-depth article interviewing Joey of Downtown Boys, right? And it's like, he is the real Joey DeFrancisco of Downtown Boys. Here's what Joey thinks. Here's where Joey comes from. Here's where Joey's going. Here's Joey's perspective on the universe. This is the article on Joey. It might get, I don't know, 300 little hearts. But if we just put a picture of Kurt Cobain and put RIP Kurt, it'll get like 10 million, right? And one is clearly more rich than the other. And I feel as though people are hearting the easy thing that is the member berries from South Park, if you will. I feel like that's what's happening, the member berries from South Park. Sam, agree or disagree?
I don't even know what reference you just made right now, but I listened to this song. I guess ska, there was a time and place for me with ska, and yes, I was probably 15 when that time and place happened. I have not really listened to ska as an adult, so this was not appealing to me whatsoever. I do understand why people would want an Op Ivy reunion. Like, there's a lot of people that got into Op Ivy, like, you know, and never got to see them. So they probably, like, you know, want to see them in their lifetime once. So, you know, if Riot Fest did want to pick something up like that, it might generate some money, you know, if dollars actually mattered in punk, you know. But yeah, no, I did not care for this, did not care for the video. The video was a little weird. There was too many liquid depths, you know, the water.
Yeah. And, you know, yeah.
Which I was like, is there a sponsorship happening? And how can I get on that? Because I like liquid depth. Punk me sponsors. Liquid depth. Make it happen, please.
M, are we all, yeah. How come the three of us hate it and everyone else loves it?
I don't know, because I liked it. I thought it was good.
Oh, good. Well, no, one of us should like it, because obviously the fans like it. So please, yes, speak to what's good about this.
I thought it was just, like, all of the steps to get there, I think, like, you know, there was Laura Jane Grace's petition, and then Eve Six was like, hey, we can play covers. And then Riot Fest ran a Twitter poll asking who would be the worst band to cover Operation Ivy. And Eve Six won with 78.4% of the vote. The other two bands were Yaku and 11teen. So they lost. But just, like, seeing that, like, so many people thought it would be awful. And then they did it anyway, you know. Yeah, I thought the cover was fun. Like, again, it doesn't really compare to the original. I don't think anything can really, like, compare to the original. But yeah, like it was fun, and I liked the video. Like aside from like the liquid death, because that's an unholy amount. Like that's like I don't. You would have to pee so much. Like I know they didn't drink it all at once, but I'm just like, you know, picturing like kind of contests, like see how many you can down. But like I thought it was kind of the video was funny because you know they have like the punk rules or whatever, like don't wear your own merch, and then it shows everyone wearing their own merch. And my favorite part of it was when it said no industry plants, and then it shows a plant, like a potted plant, and next to it says industry plant. And at one point somebody puts like little wire rimmed glasses on the plant, and they show it a couple times, and that was just a joy. That I think that speaks more to my mental state than anything, but that was my favorite part of the whole thing. It was so good. The one thing though, at the beginning when the man from Eve 6 and Reed from We Are the Union, or wait, anyway, the heart goes in the blender, that bothered me because then that song started going through my head and kind of ruined, like, you know, the song. Cause it's like, I don't want to think about that song, but now I am, you know, and I want to enjoy the cover. But, yeah, all in all, I thought it was fun. They, you know, did something for fun. So well, I'm on board.
That's probably a healthy perspective to have.
Well, everyone can congratulate themselves and feel like they did a good job with this one. But I'll tell you who did do a good job with this one. Marissa Paternoster of Screaming Female. She's got her first solo album coming out, although she has released material as Noun, which is essentially solo. But this is Marissa's solo, except for it's not really solo. She recorded it with Snakeskin and with a couple of other drummers, I think. The new album is going to be called Peace Meter. It's out via Don Giovanni, who has released almost all the Screaming Female stuff and the Noun stuff. And I spelled Noun wrong in this article. I called it Noim when it should be Noun. And I'm going to do that right now. And the new track is called White Dove. And it's got Marissa walking around to what I think is the very famous cemetery in Philadelphia, which is a gigantic 1900s cemetery, which is pretty cool. I thought this is great. I thought, first of all, this is great. Paternoster is one of the foremost singer-songwriters, punkers in punk today, in music today. This song is so beautiful and so kind of spooky and so sad, but I didn't want to stop listening to it. I think Marissa Paternoster is really one of the few vocalists that can sing transcendently and make you feel things greater than yourself and really make you feel connection with a universal pulse, if there is one. I think Paternoster is one of these kind of like the soul singers, like the reggae singers. Paternoster really is an amazing singer, an amazing songwriter, and I dig how this has got kind of like a lot of her solo stuff has a slightly gothy vibe to it, or almost like a mechanical vibe to it, and this has that vibe, and I really dig it, and I'm excited. I pre-ordered this right away. I'm excited. I think Paternoster is one of the most daring, I don't know if it's super daring, but interesting musicians out there today. I am psyched for this. Sammy B, what do you think?
I have not listened to Noin yet, or Noun, or Noun, or whatever it's spelled over here. I will listen to it, but I do like Screaming Females a lot, and I did dig this. I really, really liked, this is different, right? This is not like Screaming Females. Yeah. I like the fact that she, yes, does transcend many, many different genres. This song almost has, like, there was a part where it was, like, electro-synthy-like with, like, an indie edge to it, which I really did enjoy because I'm into weird electro-synthy things sometimes. The video is really great. It's weird whenever you're in a cemetery in real life, but this makes sense. If that makes any sense. I was like, the fact that she's walking through a cemetery wearing all white and just holding these flowers, like, it just is very beautiful in a way. You know, mouthing the lyrics of the song. So yes, I do dig this. This is cool.
The song itself, some, I think I need to listen to it a couple more times because it just didn't, like, it didn't grab me. I will say her vocals layered and layered like that. It really, I'm with you, John. It's just like so pretty. Right. And I really loved hearing her sing like this. It really was like something different from her that I really enjoyed. I think I maybe just needed, it was like, I mean, with a song this slow and pretty, it feels unfair to say like, well, where's the hook? But like, I did just, there was, I just wanted it to be like, I don't know, something just a little, because obviously there are plenty of ballads that like still have like great hooks. I was just wanting it to, something in it to just like catch my ear a little bit more. But I'm excited that she's making music like this. I really, really, really enjoyed listening to her sing this song. I thought it was great. Did you like it?
Yeah. Marissa Paternoster's voice is just like incredible. Like it's the song and the video, like they mash so well together. And yeah, like exactly. Like the imagery is just beautiful and it syncs up and it's so like it's otherworldly almost. Like, you know, when you listen to something and you feel it so much, you have like an ache, you know, and it like it's calling and the song's responding and it just kind of goes that way, you know, like, yeah, it's great. And I'm looking forward to hearing more of her solo stuff.
Well, there you have it. Three of us are right and one of us are wrong. This is an amazing song. Here's something that might be amazing or might not be amazing. Jim Rowland, who wrote the Keith Morris book, My Damage, and also who wrote the Bad Religion biography, is coming out with a new book. It's called Corporate Rock Still Sucks, and it's the rise and fall of SST Records. It's going to be out April via Hatchet Books, and I think it's not an oral history, but he interviewed a bunch of label employees, as musicians, managers, producers, photographers, video directors, and label heads. I think it's pretty much going to be what we all expect, and that it's going to be Black Flag, Minutemen, Descendants, SST Can't Lose, and then Greg Ginn decides to put out some terrible jazz records, and then another terrible jazz record, and then 27 more terrible jazz records, and then it's the end. I think that's exactly what it's going to be. I wonder, in the comment section someone put, I wonder how many more unflattering Greg Ginn stories are going to come out of this, and my answer is, I'll take all you got. You know, I love reading bad things about Greg Ginn just because he's such a frustrating guy. Unquestionably, he is the key guy in early Black Flag, although Keith Morris and Chuck DeCounsel are both very important. And he invented a genre, if you will, and he had a unique style, a very unique style. He's one of the most talented guitar players ever. And he just purposefully like threw it away through paranoia, through alienation, just through contempt, through jealousy, through envy, and through laziness. And so And honestly, I wouldn't be so negative with Greg Ginn, except for he was so anti-Flag. If he had just taken the position, listen, Flag can do what they want, they'll never have Greg Ginn in their band, and that's on them. So, haha. I would be like, that's a good point, Greg. I'm still going to go see Flag because I love them. But that's a good point. But instead he put, like, you know, Flag is bad, and you should come see my Black Flag. And Flag just destroyed, quote, Black Flag. So I'll take all the nego Greg Ginn stories you got. So I will definitely be reading this. Hallie Bullock, will you be reading this? And will you also enjoy the Greg Ginn schadenfreude?
I definitely want to read this. This sounds totally amazing. It's kind of fun to hear people complain about him. So that'll be good. And I have to say, this comment thread, John, was like one of the more productive comment threads, I thought. Right? Like, I thought, like, I loved that comment that you referenced. And I learned that someone was saying that there's the podcast where they went through the entire SST catalog, and then occasionally they did like interviews and stuff. And that sounded really interesting. I think I would be interested in checking both the book and maybe that podcast out as well. Em, are you going to throw this book in the trash? Are you so not excited about this book?
I think it'll be good. I love reading like punk books, even if it's like stuff I'm not 100% like familiar with. So I'm really looking forward to it. I've read parts of My Damage and I really liked it, but I haven't been able to read the full book yet. And the Bad Religion book, it was okay. I was kind of disappointed with it, but like it was still like solid, like it was still good. So I'll definitely read this when it floats my way for sure. Sam, what did you think?
I'm with you on the just being curious about things that are, you know, isn't necessarily up my alley. So I do hope that this becomes an audiobook because I only have time for audiobooks on my trip to work and stuff. yeah, because, you know, like this record label is kind of prolific and, you know, just, I guess, like the punk spheres. And it does make sense for me to at least get to know even the gossip about it, just to get an understanding. Because, you know, there has been like tons and tons of bands that like came through SST Records. So I'll check it out when it gets there.
Well, let's do one last story that people are checking out. Surfboard have released a new video and also the new album is out. The video is for Big Star and the album is called Keep On Truckin' and it's out now through SoundCloud and Spotify. And what was weird is that they like didn't do an announcement on their Facebook or their Bandcamp and the album's not on their Bandcamp and there's no physical version and it's not even clear what label it's on. And I'm like, what is going – like, is Surfboard, like, breaking down? Like, what is going on? Well, there is somewhat of an answer. Apparently, the whole album was produced by Linda Perry of Four Non Blondes, who has also produced a whole bunch of other stuff, including Gwen Stefani. And the reason there's no physical version of the album and it's not on the Bandcamp is because it's part of some deal that Linda Perry has with SoundCloud where albums will debut on SoundCloud. And not that I'm actually pro Linda Perry. I think she's a great producer, and I do love the song What's Going On, or it's called What's Up, I guess. Although, honestly, people that have worked with Linda Perry don't seem to share my opinion. That being said, I will say it's like the release of this album was so odd. And like, are people going to SoundCloud because Linda Perry worked on the app? Like, is that a draw? People are like, oh, man, Linda Perry produced an album. I got to go to SoundCloud and check it out. Like, is Linda Perry a driving force of commerce, or is she just really good at what she does and she makes things good, but like people aren't like, oh, I need more Linda Perry production. You know what I mean? Like if Rick Rubin produces something, people go like, oh, Rick Rubin, even though he hasn't really produced anything great in like 30 years, or 20 years, but like is Linda Perry a big draw, I guess? And did you all enjoy this video? Hallie Bull, do you enjoy the Big Star video? And are you excited by the Linda Perry production connection?
Yeah, I mean, she's a really talented producer. It makes sense why a lot of it just the stuff has been sounding so good. I liked this song not as much as maybe some of the other stuff I've heard off this album, but I thought it proved that they can kind of do something that's like a little bit more of like a slower. I don't know how maybe when you guys talk about it, maybe you can describe the song a little bit better than I can, but I did like it. I liked the video and I don't know why, but I sort of kept thinking of like the Cars when I was watching it, just in that I feel like this singer is just, she's really, really magnetic. And in all of their videos so far, she just has some, I don't know, something really stylized and cool going on. And I don't know. This band just reminds me of other great bands like the Cars, where you're just like, this singer is doing something so unique. And that's kind of the thread. Like the videos are all really different, but to me, like the thread is just like her and her persona and her charisma. And so, yeah, I'm just like, I'm really into this band and I'm into all these Linda Perry produced tracks.
And Linda Perry, where do you stand? And Surfboard, where do you stand?
Linda Perry, great producer. Surfboard, great band. I really liked the video. Thought it was really really colorful and like lots going on. It was in an Instagram post on the band's account, but they mentioned something like clothes by Gucci. And what? I thought that, yeah, like clothes and I don't think it was makeup, but it was like clothes by Gucci. And in one of the pictures, Danny Miller has a compact that says like Gucci on it. So I don't know what the connection is there, because I know they worked with Gucci in, I think, 2019 for their pre-fall campaign. So I don't know if, like, they're still working together or what's going on, but I thought that was kind of interesting. I liked the song. I thought it was, like, it was a bit slower. Excuse me. Slower than usual, but I think it really worked for them and worked with the vibe they were going for. Sam, what did you think?
So I was not 100% on board with the song because it was slower. I like the other two songs a lot more, but I do like this video more because of the colors and, you know, her outfit was very appealing because I like things like things that looks like unicorns on things and her hair. I don't know. I don't know, like, there was kind of, like, in the video, like, a part where I almost felt like she looked like David Bowie. Like, there was, like, a section of it, and it, like, really, really, like, harked that. And I was like, huh, interesting. I don't know if this is intentional, but it really has, like, a feel right now. And I don't know if it's because the hair is very Bowie-esque or the silhouette. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's like very, yeah, her look is very Bowie. And I think it's interesting that like we're citing all these like really, really powerful, iconic, like
big
singers of bands, right? Like she really does kind of hearken that style of just like front person, right? Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but just chiming in to say yes.
Yes, yes, yes. No, it's totally fine that you're chiming in because I was done.
Okay.
Well, there you have it. People are generally a fan of surfboard, but the question we all want to know is, does Linda Perry still wear that hat? Who knows? So anyways, Emmore's going to play a song, and Hattie's going to play a song, and then we're going to just wrap this bad boy up. Emmore, what's the song you're going to play?
All right, so the song I'm going to play, it's called Blood on the Cross, and it's by an indigenous hardcore band called Indian Giver out of Toronto and Vancouver. They bill themselves as Turtle Island Hardcore, and the song also features vocalist Carla Gonzalez. So this is Blood on the Cross by Indian Giver featuring Carla Gonzalez.
Falling apart for proper consumption, resisting the urge, the cry for attention, living online, dying of boredom, a haven of rejection. The algorithm came from the soil, blood on the cross. How many more will tally this loss? Focus in veil, a hollow apology. Life won't stop, still there's no wall of me. We'll
Did I not leave enough of a space? Sorry, I just like charged right into my song, which is I've played this band on the podcast before. This is the Almighty Vacation from Cincinnati, Ohio. They came out with a new album called Existential Risks and Returns in August, and this song is called Ripe.
And we'll see you next week.
Whoopee.
Woo! 2 minutes to spare.